go without the intro today. Gents and ladies out there listening, just wanted to give a bit of an absence explanation, I guess. Personally, have had a bit going on the last fortnight with a change of career beckoning and other bits and pieces, and probably got a bit slack. Certainly don't have a guest to blame because the guys who are keen to be interviewed next have been fantastic, and it's been my my inconsistency that has caused us not to have an episode to put up. And gentleman that we're going to talk to today had a friend of his on that really, I think, resonated with him, but he's listened to all the podcasts, which is just brilliant. And he'd been pretty generously chasing me up and locally last week, not too far from us, a young, very successful footballer took his own life, and that kind of made me realize I need to pull the finger out of the arse and keep posting and keep trying to add value and trying to reach people. And then unfortunately, this week on Monday, lost a good friend from footy, and probably do a specific podcast on that at some stage. But and then last night, when was talking to a good friend from footy about that loss, he actually got a call, and another friend he knew locally had taken his own life in New South Wales last night. So he copped two suicides of close mates in the 1 week. So my apologies. It's made me pull my head in a bit and realise from the beautiful feedback a lot of you give us that this is important, and that I need to persevere with it. And lovely man speaking with today is Mitch. Introduce yourself, big fella.
G'day, Brighton. How are you?
I'm good, mate. I'm good. Well, good. I'm trucking considering this week, yeah, but mate, I'll
big,
get there.
Big week. But you know, you're kicking goals, buddy. So quite good. So let's go. Let's do it.
Cool, mate. So all the basics. What's your full name, mate? When were you born?
Mitch Van Eckeren, 1977 model. So 43.
Young fella.
Yeah, young fella. Born in Mafra. Born in Mafra, raised in Sale. That was pretty much been a sale boy for forever. Did spend a little bit of time down on the coast in Locksport when I was in my teens.
Beautiful but cold.
Yeah, but good.
Yeah.
Good. It was a good time. Yeah. And then ended up back in Sale. So
good community, yeah, Locksport. Pretty similar to Mafra.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, it's not bad. Problem
look
is
after their own a bit.
Yeah, one way in, one way out kills it a little bit. But yeah, the locals like it, like that. You know, it gets busy summer. It's flat out, a bit like any coastal town. But it was good. Mum and dad are still living there. Got a sister who's 40, I think. Yeah. Lives in Pakenham. So that's it. That's me, pretty much.
Cool. So schooling growing up, where'd that happen, mate?
Yeah, like I said, Sale. Went to 545 primary school. And then on to, it was Sale Tech it used to be back then.
Yep.
Then it morphed into McAllister Secondary College, and then obviously now it's Sale College. So, yeah, that's where I did that. I went up to about year 10. I completed year 10, just passed it. I was lazy. And then, yeah, was working. I was actually working during year 10. I was working pretty much full time in a restaurant well as schooling. So that's probably why school suffered a bit, but. So completed year 10. The restaurant was working at wasn't really working out. The boss was an absolute prick. So I snatched that, and I had the choice was there. It was either continue to work, get a job, like full time job, or go back to school. And I wasn't going back to school because I was already in that works sort of situation. So I didn't want to, school wasn't for me.
Once you've bridged that gap of being an adult, it's pretty hard to want to go backwards from there.
Yeah, that's it. You know, like I was sort of hanging out till I was 16 just so I could get out of the place pretty much.
Yeah. So take us through the vagaries of the career, I guess, mate. Where have you gone since the restaurant to where we know you are today?
Yeah, well, I still like cooking. That basically, the only opportunity I really had at the time, you know, there wasn't a lot around, so my dad owned a mechanical repair place in town, so it was basically it, pick up the spanners and go work for dad. So that's what you did. That's what I did. So, yeah, I was there. Did 3 years of apprenticeship with him. And then ended up working for a guy in Mafra. Can finish my apprenticeship there. And then ended up in a few places over there. A few doing RACV work and stuff like that. And then 2000, I took over the family business, pretty much. Dad decided to retire early and took over the family business in 2000. Yeah, so ran that for 9 years. Yeah, and then had to step away. So.
Yep.
Yeah.
And so, backtracking slightly, hobbies growing up?
Hobbies growing up was, motorbikes were a big part of my life early. I didn't ride much though, because mum and dad were the catering officers at the Mafra Sale Motorcycle Club. So we used to go around all the races a lot, and so they'd be busy, you know, cooking food for people and that sort of stuff, because the races back then, a little bit different to what happens now. You know, I used to be able to set up a track and a paddock and run a race meeting, you know, but those days are gone.
Pre-OAS chess.
Yeah, like, mate, it was they used to, you know, it was awesome. You'd pay, you know, $5 or $10 and you'd rock up and there'd be a few people running the event and you'd just go for it. And that's why this area has produced a lot of guys that are good at that sport. Well, they did, you know, pre-2000 type thing, because that was what we did. Everyone did it. So, yeah, I didn't really do much riding. I played footy and cricket. I still do play cricket. I didn't play footy until I was in high school. So, yeah, year seven, I sort of met a few mates and stuff like that, you know, a few new kids, as you do when you get out of primary school. You meet some new kids, some fresh kids in high school, and I started having a kick of footy. And same with cricket. Played cricket and footy with the same guys, pretty much, you know what I mean? So, that was good. But, yeah, cricket, stuck with cricket right through until, you know, had a few years, seasons off here and there. But, yeah, got to thirds with footy, and, yeah, I started racing bikes a bit more serious then, and that's when I started working and stuff like that too. So, and my music I was taking pretty serious as well.
Yep.
You know, played a few school bands and crap like that, you know, as you do with a few mates, and I got cousins and stuff like that play, and, yeah, mucked around and that sort of thing, but started taking it a little bit more serious when I got to me like sort of mid to late teens. Same with the bike racing. So that sort of footy took a bit of a backward step, because it was a winter sport, you know, so didn't really, it clashed with footy. So it was one or the other, and I picked a bike racing. Footy was, yeah, sort of give that up.
What sort of bike racing?
Oh, it's motocross. Yeah, so dirt bike racing. Yeah, and then a little bit of off-road, which is a little different discipline. Sort of goes into the bush a bit more, but yeah, a bit of both, but mainly motocross. You race locally, you did like all the Mafra Sale local stuff, and I did the Gippsland Championships and the Victorian titles and that sort of stuff, so yeah.
What sort of length course, familiar with motocross, but the off-road stuff, what would that sort of comprise of?
Like, if you do it, look at like the most off road, what they call a loop, which would be like a part bushland and all that sort of stuff. Most of the loops would be sort of 15 minutes or 20 minute loop, and it'd cut into the bush and be all single track. I mean, being a horse guy, you've probably done a little bit of trail riding and stuff like that, similar sort of terrain. So,
yeah, gorgeous. Mm. And we were chatting before we clicked record, obviously a drummer. What sort of music's caught your ear across the time?
I used to be right into me metal when I was younger. But that, I still love it. I branched out a little bit more. You know, our family used to play all types of different music when I was growing up. So, but yeah, sort of leaned to the harder stuff. Yeah, so, you know, look, that got into the 90s grunge stuff pretty much straight away. It was me, you know, and then sort of stuck with it. And, you know, look all the way through, and, you know, even up until now, some of the rock stuff that's very similar to that sort of genre, I'll get right into it. So,
couple of favourite bands?
Yeah. Oh, Foo Fighters, pretty good. Soundgarden. Used to love Soundgarden. Seen him live a few times. Seen Foo Fighters live a lot. When I was younger, it was Metallica and Iron Maiden and Slayer and shit like that, which I still listen to. I just put it on the car and crank it flat out. And it's funny because one of my boys, he loves it. He loves the metal too, and gets right into it. He started playing guitar and mucks around the drums and stuff like that at home, and yeah, gets amongst it. So that's good.
I recently had one of those moments where I was looking up one of my favorite albums on Spotify, and I had that moment where I realized none of the music I liked was made within the last 10 or 12 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. It clicked. I'm getting fucking old.
Yeah. It's like your intro with the Nickelback joke. It's always good. Yeah. Do have a chuckle to that one.
I killed it. I was worried about getting popular and getting a pleased assist letter from Chad. Maybe.
Yeah. But well, good. But actually, a guy I play with a bit still now. He's probably my best mate, actually. When he grows his hair out, he kind of looks a little bit like Chad. And it was actually a Facebook thing. It was a memory that came up today. And I was at one of the pubs in Sale, and the memories come up on the Facebook. And it was I took a photo of the TV that was on, because there was a live at the chapel or something that they'd done with Nickelback. And so click on that and say, "Hey man, what are you doing on the TV?" And it comes up like today every year, and I just keep sharing it. Hey man, you're on the TV.
I worked with a guy in a pub in Perth who, Dave, I think his name was, who had the same noodle hair.
Yeah.
Dyed it blonde, fuck knows why, and right, had the exact same face.
That's what happens.
He was definitely playing
Goaty. Goaty.
Yeah, loving it. Bit of a soul patch going on. Probably the only thing we haven't ticked off, mate, in the building up the picture of Mitch is current family status as an adult. What's your story now?
Three kids. Daughter, she's 18, and a son that's 12. So my first marriage.
Good ages.
Yeah. They were to my first wife, or to my wife, and then got divorced, separated in 2016. After that, found a new partner, and we've got another little fella who's just turned 2.
Oh, awesome. Yeah, good age, apart from his wrecking shit.
He's fucking loose. it's funny. Like, I said to my partner, Fiona, last week? I said, why is it? And I've heard this from a few other people. Like, I'm an older dad, I guess. But why do we have our wildest one when I'm older? And because he's a combination of the other two, and then plus you throw Fee into the mix a bit, and it's like...
Plus he's
just,
2.
Yeah, that's it. He's just... But he's fun, and he's funny, but he's just fucking crazy.
Cheeky as hell.
Oh, yeah, mad. But he's just crazy, yeah. No fear. Not a fucking scaric of fear. So, I will apologise to the listeners. I don't mind a swear word, so...
They've heard
that's
me.
Okay. So there'll be plenty. I'm sorry. I'll apologise in advance if you get offended.
Oh, good, mate. Well, that kind of rushes us through the setting up the picture of Mitch, and I guess we'll get in with the deeper stuff shortly. Now, a word from our sponsor. Nah, just fucking with you guys. We're never going to monetize this. This is your resource. And blokes... this round's on me. As we move into the next section of this conversation, we're going to be asking some pretty real questions. We're going to take things a level deeper. It'll be raw, but hopefully we'll come up with some tips and techniques that might help some fellas out there get through a bit. If what we discussed today raises some emotions for you, either from something you've got through in the past or something you're currently dealing with, discuss it with someone in your life you trust. If someone isn't immediately available, or if you're quite anxious about the feelings that you uncover, call Lifeline Australia. They're available 24/7, they care, and they're very professional. 13 11 14. Alternately, have the chat with your GP. Discuss going on a mental health plan if you're having a rough time. There's no shame in it. Get a little bit of counselling, get yourself travelling in the right direction. If the voice in our head gets a little bit negative, it doesn't magically get better. We need to introduce a professional. Someone who has a bit of rationality, someone who has a bit of positivity, somebody who can help us not just survive, but thrive. We need you, fellas, and we want to see the best of you. All right, well, we've refreshed our bevies and... I guess we'll crack on with the second bit. And I just asked Mitch if he wanted another beer, and it was getting relatively close to the bottom of his. But he says, "What's next?" And have a look at the question list, and said, "Yeah, I'll definitely get another beer." So this will probably be a cracker. I was saying to Mitch before we got started, some of the feedback I've had about some of the more outlandish interviews, I guess, or the guys that have led less common lives, shall we say, are obviously very interesting. But you know, I've found it was actually our common mate Dan Sandeman that I mentioned. I find the everyday bloke stories at least as fascinating, particularly for me not having had kids yet. When you start to talk about, you know, marriage breakdowns and all that sort of jazz, then it really resonates with me as something that would be a huge challenge. So we'll crack on with it, I guess, fella. So I guess, as always, mate, we kind of deep end you a little bit, Mitch. So to start fresh with absolutely no lube, mate, what's the hardest thing you reckon you've ever had to go through?
It's been a couple of things, actually, but between the ages of about 6 and 7 till I was about 10, 11, I guess, I was sexually abused by a family friend, a son of a family friend, and at the time, it's weird, because at the time, you don't think there's anything wrong with it, as in, like, it is what it is, type thing, I guess, but, like, because you're so young and you're only a kid and you don't know what's going on, you don't really know that it's bad, if you know what I mean. You just roll with it type thing. And then it wasn't until I was sort of at high school, you know, got a little bit older and started working out what was going on with the world and, you know, boys and girls and that kind of shit. It's like, oh, hang on a minute. What was going on with that wasn't right. And then, okay, and you start thinking about things and, like, sort of stuff, and you know, and you realize it's not right, and you start to process it, I guess, like, why isn't it right and stuff like that. And you know, so like I said, at the time you didn't think it was bad, you know, or it was not the norm, but you just didn't think it was anything of it. But you know, as I got older, I did work out that, hang on, this isn't right here. So, yeah, it's tough to talk about. There'll be people that'll listen to this that know me that don't know this. So, you know, I haven't told that many people, really. My close mates know. Because, you know, it's funny, it was only about 6 months ago before this whole lockdown shit, like COVID and that started, and I'd hit the wall fucking hard. And then I'm like, I've got to get this out. Off my chest a bit, so my nearest and dearest sort of knew and all that sort of stuff. Like, even my first wife didn't even know. You know, I didn't, we'll get to that too, but, like, I didn't feel comfortable telling her, you know, because of the relationship that we had at the time and all that sort of stuff. I didn't feel comfortable. My parents didn't know. My parents didn't know until not too long ago, in fact. We'll get to that as well, but yeah, they didn't know. And look, he wasn't an adult, so look, I didn't report it or anything like that, you know, to the cops or none of that shit. And but it's just something that, like, you deal with it. Like, you deal with it in different ways. Everyone deals with different shit in different ways. Look, I've talked to people about stuff, you know, like therapists and shit, like, and doctors and stuff like that. Therapy and stuff's not for me. I can probably, you know, a little bit old school. Like, I'm only learning recently how to open up about all kinds of shit. You know, stuff you bottle it up for a long time. But yeah, it got to that point where I had to just sort of let it all out and told a few people, and it made me feel heaps better. And like a few other guys that you've interviewed and stuff like that have said similar stuff about their experiences with life. It's like, you know, bottle shit up, until you're to a point where you just fucking pop and you need to get it out somehow. But yeah, for me, the best way to sort of deal with it was to talk to mates about it. And look, and it's one of those things too. You're embarrassed. You're embarrassed about talking about it because you think, oh, fuck, you know, they'll fucking laugh at me, or you know, think it's a joke, or you know, no one believe you. So you just sort of don't worry about it, type thing. But yeah, so that's what's going on with that. So that was the first one, which I'm still, yeah, you still deal with it daily, mate. Second one was getting divorced. Well, you know, going through a divorce, a messy fucking divorce, is fucked. Mate, the system is not set up for blokes. Unfortunately, I'm sorry if you've got any like lady listeners listening and all that sort of thing, but if they're the right kind of people, I'm not a genderist or anything, but if they're the right kind of people and they can see the system for what it is, and until you go through it as a guy, like you say, Sandy, you know, he had to deal with some shit with his first marriage and all that sort of stuff as well. And, mate, there's millions of guys around Australia that deal with this shit daily. Like, daily, I'm in a few support groups and stuff like that for guys that are separated or, you know, going through all this stuff, looking for advice on what to do. And there's just so many guys that are just so naive to the system. And unfortunately, and this is a big, like, I'm not bashing, like, you know, I'm not knocking women or any of that kind of stuff, or, you know, but the system is broken, you know. And as much as you might not like her or hate her guts or whatever, like Pauline Hanson was going into this Royal Commission of the family law system and you got shut down at every turn. And there's a reason for that, because it makes too much fucking money. And I felt it firsthand, like in like so many ways, like, you know, from the beginning, you know, there's intervention orders and all this shit, and all these intervention orders and stuff like that are all a means to an end. They're all the way to control the situation. You know, look, I can document it from start to finish. I've got a fucking folder, mate, from my lawyer, her lawyer, fucking child support, who else? The Department of Health and Human Services, the fucking cops, the family court, affidavits. Fuck, mate, it's a fucking folder. It's a foot tall. It is insane. It's under my bed. My eldest daughter, she's 18. She doesn't speak to me because of what went down. And look, I don't know. There's been stories and shit that have gone around about how it happened and what happened and stuff, and she probably heard the wrong story. So she doesn't speak to me. She hasn't spoken to me for about 3 or 4 years. She hasn't even met her little brother, which makes me a bit sad. Hasn't made any attempt to want to. But yeah, the system's fucked. It is fucking so bad. But, you know, you pick yourself up and fucking crack on, mate, because that's what you got to do. So those two things pretty bad. Third one, this would be close to your heart. I mean, and even this will make you chuckle a bit, I guess, too. Look, even after all the fucking shit that me and my ex-wife went through to get to the point where we were, she had a brain aneurysm only 12 months ago, just over 12 months ago, and then she was in a coma for 3 months. And then now she's slowly rehabilitating and coming good, and she had a stroke and that at the same time. Those are two different things, but very similar. But yeah, I mean, that hit me harder than I thought it would too, because, you know, she's the mother of my two first children, and seeing what my son Zane had to go through with it all, that fucking hurt real bad. So yeah, three things there that aren't real flash, but you know, it's fucking life experience, mate. It is. It, what the shit you go through makes you who you are. So you got to do it. You just crack on.
I'll go back in reverse through those, mate, because you know, seems like the appropriate way to go. But obviously, probably can't even remember which podcast it was in, but obviously shared that my old man had a massive aneurysm and got the call from my sister, and we thought we were basically meeting in Melbourne to turn off the switch, so to speak, and end up, don't know if it's the right thing to say, regrettably, because kind of got to have a half conversation or two with him after, but you know, how much of that he was on autopilot for, I'm not sure, but it was a messy 3 months of watching him be a shadow of the man I knew and admired on his way out, I guess. So, you know, you don't want to see your worst enemy like that, I guess, is probably my takeaway specific to what you've said. And, you know, as much as you might hate each other in the moment, you've obviously been through enough shit that you're always going to
100%
have a bond.
You know, married for 15 years and two children and all that sort of stuff. And yeah, for sure. Like, you wouldn't wish upon your worst enemy, mate. I'm an empathetic person, you know. Like, I was pretty angry. Like I said, there was some shit that led up to it, I guess. How do you put it? Shit leading up to it. So, you know, like, even... your family, that's what we're getting at. Like, a family didn't tell me for a week. You know, my kids were staying with her sister, and they didn't even have the guts to fucking ring me to tell me what had happened. You know, and I'm speaking to my son on the phone every day. Well, what are you up to, mate? Because, you know, it was, you know, the custody deal, you know, care, they call it now. They don't call it custody anymore. They call it care arrangement. You know, so, look, you know, I've X amount of days, and, you know, my ex-wife had X amount of days as well, you know, so it all evens out.
Someone made everyone a salary out of fucking changing that name, mate.
Yeah, I know, mate. It's fucking unreal. So, and we'll get to why it's like that. But, you know, my son, who's near 12, 11 at the time, was told not to tell me a fucking thing. And he sat there and spoke to me on the phone. I said, "Hey, you been going, mate?" "Oh, yeah, great, Dad. Good." And his mother was in the hospital in Melbourne. He found her on the floor. The poor kid's 12, like 11.
It's an awful lot of emotional weight not to be able to offload.
He was told not to say anything. And anyway, finally found out, so, you know. And then it now blew up and all that sort of, well, not blew up, but, you know, I was pretty fucking wild. And then, anyway, it got to that point, you know, she was in Melbourne and all that sort of stuff, and then we had to put some things in place. And, clearly, well, I mean, with her condition that she's in now, she's got limited mobility, and she's living independently with my daughter, which is good. And you know, Zane goes and spends time there. You know, he spends probably three days a week there, which is quite good now. So, and he's comfortable to do that, especially with the remote learning, with the COVID stuff going on. He can go over there and spend the night with mum and your sister and all that sort of stuff. But, yeah, there was a period where he was living with us full time, but that wasn't an easy task to put into place either, because there was still people making noises about going back to court and all this fucking stupid thing. So, but anyway, we got to where we are, and surprisingly things have settled down, which is quite good.
Go back to the second one, and I always try and fail miserably to avoid being political on the topic, but it's definitely a conversation needs to be had about you know, our broader family court system and its bias, which I understand maybe pre-nine months sort of thing, but it's disproportionate bias towards the mother in a situation. And how brutal that is on a man's mental health, because even, you know, an entirely amicable situation, or even a situation that might have been caused by the female, it's a classic scenario of the victor writes history, and when there's a strong bias towards the mother having custody, regardless of the circumstances or relatively regardless of the fitness, it just puts a shadow over the man. that they're somehow at fault, even though it might in no way be the circumstance. And that obviously hugely contributes to issues with mental health. Massively, mate.
Look, you can... It's funny, look... Like I said, I've got this massive folder. It's about a foot thick with all the shit that's in it. And you can sit, you could basically get a whiteboard if you wanted to, and you can plot the actual path that the solicitors will take in the beginning. And it depends, and it all comes down to whoever gets in first, whether it's a mum or the dad or whatever. But there's a path that they take. And especially if there's assets and property that's involved as well, if you're going through a divorce at the same time as well as trying to sort out your family arrangements for the kids and all that sort of stuff. But there's a, mate, you can get a whiteboard with a fucking Sharpie and write on there, and there's a process that they all go through, and they're all the fucking same. I know people need solicitors for jobs and stuff like that, but some of them are in it for the cash, and they can see the path, and they coach people. I was coached on what to do in that situation because, that's what you're paying them for. And, that your ex is coached and all this sort of shit. And it's, mate, it's insane. It honestly, like, here you go, as an example. We were trying to sort out arrangements for the children. So I had to go and do, First thing I did, I called a solicitor, got that sorted out, no worries. Off my own bat, I went to mediation, or I went and saw a mediation. It's a government-funded thing. You sign up to go to mediation. Now, what they do is, they say, look, what we're going to try and do is get an amicable result for your children without the court. No worries. Okay, so you walk in there. I instigated it, so I went there, explained my situation. We had a court rider, I guess, or a mediator. So we go in there. I go in there, explain my situation. Look, all I want's fair time with my children, because by this point, Max was getting a bit nasty because, not allowing the kids to spend, Well, at the very beginning, when we first separated, it was going to be 50-50, and then it sort of slowly started to, the kids were, oh, no, it's easier. Like, I was living in Seaspray at the time because we'd had a house there, and so I was living there, and I was travelling in backwards and forwards to work in Sale, and then it was, oh, and the kids got sports, so it's easier if they're in Sale. And then it turned into, oh, you can go to Dad's every second weekend. And I'm like, no, this is fucking bullshit, Why should it be every second weekend? So then I went to mediation and all that. So that sort of jumping around a bit here. Went to mediation, explained my situation. One of the kids 50-50. Okay, so for some reason, my daughter was 16 at the time. Well, no, she was older. Oh, younger. She was, she's 18 now. She was 14. Well, I have to do a parenting course. So I've got a, hang on. So I've got a 14-year-old and a 7-year-old, and I've got to do a parenting course on how to be a parent.
Horse might have bolted.
Right. On that one. So, okay, no worries. So I played the game, mate. I went and did their course, did all that sort of shit. So I'll go to media. Today's the day. So we're walking. Yep, we're going to get something here. So, yeah. I know most jobs are performance-based and all that sort of stuff, and it's all about numbers. I mean, you're in advertising. That's what happens, mate. Okay, I get that. That's fine. But when you're in that sort of situation, I don't think that's exactly fair. I was in mediation. I was sitting there. My ex was in another room, and we're going backwards and forwards about time spent and all this sort of stuff. And the mediator kept saying to me, oh, you got to do what's in best interest for the kids. And I'm like, yeah, I'm trying to do what's in the best interest for my kids. And I know what's in the best interest for my kids. But my ex is telling you that she knows what's best for my kids, and it's not spending as much time with me as I'd like them to and they need. So it was, mate, it was crazy. So 3.5 hours we sat there going backwards and forwards, negotiating, inverted commas. And he was clock watching, this bloke. who's the mediator, he was clock watching. And he turns around to me and goes, oh, look, you know, you need to really start thinking about what's going to be best for your children. And I'm like, mate, I know exactly what's best for my children. I'm not budging. He goes, oh, you know, you need to sort of be a bit more flexible. You say me to be flexible. And I'm like, no, mate, I've been flexible for quite a while. I don't think I want to be flexible anymore. So let's just move on. Anyway, so I got to, it was about the 3.5 hour mark. And I looked at the clock and he was watching it. And he's turned around to me and goes, oh, well, you know, you only get X amount of hours for free and then there's a cost involved. And I go, mate, I couldn't give a fuck if there was a cost involved here. I'm happy to pay. And he's sort of looking at me. And I said, look, we're not going to get a result here. I can know what's going to happen. We're not going to get a result. So I stood up. I shook the bloke's hand. I said, thanks very much for your time, mate. I don't mean to waste it. I know what the process is. Now that I'm into this position, I'll get a Section 60, what they call a Section 60i certificate, which allow you to go to court because the court will tell. You can show the court that you've tried. No worries. So I got my Section 60i. Off I went. I'm on the way home. This is from Traralgon to Sale. I'm on the way back, and I'm like, fuck, I reckon something's going to happen here. Something real, you know, didn't sit right. Like, something's going to happen. And I was due to pick the kids up. I think, must have been the next day. Anyway, so, yeah, things were a bit funny. And then I got back to Sale. I thought, fuck, I think she's going to do something. Well, not do something stupid, but something's going to happen about this. So I'll go to the police station. I'll go in there. I saw the desk sergeant, whoever it was, constable. I said, look, mate, I think I'll explain the situation. Just been a mediation in Traralgon. It didn't work out. I think my ex-wife is going to take out an intervention order against me. And he goes, oh, okay. There's nothing we can do. And I'm like, or maybe try to go to the courthouse. So I go to the Sale courthouse and went in there. Spoke to the clerk of court's desk and I said, look, what do I do? And they said, well, what do you mean, what do you do? If you're going to get an intervention order taken out on you, you get one. I go, well, but I've done nothing wrong. And they're like, oh, well, that's for the court to determine. And I'm like, oh, is it? Well, here's some paperwork. So they gave me a leaflet on what to do if you do get an intervention order taken out on you. And the other piece of paper was how to take out an intervention order and the forms to fill out. I left the courthouse. I walked out of the door to my car. My ex-wife pulls up behind me, gets out with a smile on her face and waves to me and walks into the courthouse. 4 days later, I get a knock on the door from the police. Sorry, mate. Got some papers to serve. Oh, really? Bang. Intervention order. I'd done nothing wrong. All she had to do was say she feared for her safety, and that was it.
And what does that affect from there forward, and for how long?
Well, what happens then is she can control the situation is controlled by basically her side of the fence. So once that's in place, the court starts to look at my behaviour. What my past behaviour, what the behaviour of the children, and what my behaviour is around the children. It determines assets. They say it doesn't, but it does, because it will determine on how much, if there's going to be a asset pool and what's split up, and how much time the kids are with mum or dad, how much they get split, and all this sort of stuff. So it's all in a big circle, and they will turn around and say that it isn't, but mate, I've been through it, and there's plenty of blokes around that have been, and there's guys going through it daily, and so many of them, it really makes me angry, because there's so many guys that are so oblivious to how the system works, and they think, oh no, and oh, she won't fuck me. You know what I mean? Oh, we've got the kids, and then you say, well, who's got the house? Oh, she's living in the house, I'm still paying the mortgage. Right. So what's going to happen when you want to sell that house? Do you reckon she's still going to let you, inverted commas, take the kids whenever you want them and do all this stuff and do all this? And, you know, are you paying child support? I just give her cash and things like this. And it's just like, mate, you need to put a put it in place. You need to put it in the bank. You need to do this. You need to do that. And be careful when you sell your house, because I can tell you right now, the minute you want to sell that house and she's got to move into somewhere else and she haven't got it, you know, hasn't got a nice roof over her head. I know, I understand that you got to put a roof over your children's head and all that sort of stuff too. But I mean, fair's fair, and mate, it gets fucking nasty.
Yeah, definitely seems like a big game rather than a amicably trying to work out what's best for the kids.
It is, and it's so sad and unfortunate that it does get to that. And look, I mean, I know that you've come from a separated family and all that sort of stuff too, and I hope your experience in it all was a lot better through it. But yeah, it's hard work. It's hard work. I know Sandy on his podcast that he did with you, you know, he tried to talk about, you know, how he was a lot younger too, like, you know, and he had little kids or twins, and like, that'd be tough, man. Hard work. Like, very hard.
Yeah, no, I totally understand that. And I saw a post recently about the inequality of that system, I guess, and I saw it shared by a couple of, I guess, reputable players in the mental health and men's mental health field, but I couldn't get an answer as to whether it was credentialed in terms of the statistics they mentioned, so I didn't share it on the platform or anything, but the post suggested, and I'm not sure it even sounds true, but it's worth investigating, that something like towards 80% of male suicides are at the time of a marriage or relationship breakup. And when you're thinking about, you know, six a day or whatever it is, probably more this year, unfortunately, fuck, that's a conversation that needs to be had.
Massive one, mate. You've knocked it on the head. And I honestly think that that's probably, like you say, the stats aren't concrete because you don't have them in front of us. I don't have them either, but it would not surprise me one bit that that would be correct. 100% correct.
Well, not that that's not dark enough for us, but I'm really curious to tread lightly, not go outside my experience and or expertise, but got a couple of questions about the first one you mentioned. And to be honest, mate, I've been not dreading, but I've been nervous about the day it would come, because it's you know, just it's a very, very uncomfortable topic, and like it I is. Said, something that I don't have a lot of experience in. I'll certainly try and read plenty on it, but so I'm not going to delve into the details, because it really doesn't matter. It's the betrayal of trust, I guess, that's, you know, that's paramount to the awful experience. Mm. But when you kind of alluded to it when you said about opening up, but when did you start to have processed that sexual abuse? When did you start to feel like it didn't need to affect you moving forward and like you were safe, I guess?
It was actually my current partner, Fiona, who is just a fucking angel. She's amazing. She's been through some fucking hard shit herself, mate. She lost a partner in a car accident about 2010, I think, before we'd met. And it's funny because I'd known her father for about 20 years before, and I'd never met her. And, we met and basically hit it off straight away and bang, bang, bang. And look, she's taught me how to talk about stuff easier, I guess, because, you know, look, being that generation that I am, sort of thing, it was a lot of shit you bottle up, you know. Look, that's what your podcast is called, mate. Blokes don't talk, and they don't, we need to talk more. And look, she was the first one that I could sit here like this with you, and I can't even remember how it come up. I just blurted it out one day, and she went, "What the fuck?" And I'm like, "Whoa." She goes, "Is that the first time you've actually said that to anyone?" I'm like, "I think it is. Yes, it is." And she's like, "Fuck, that's heavy." I'm like, "Yeah, it's pretty heavy." Yeah, it is massively heavy. And then, but So that was, it was good to get it off my chest and actually tell someone about it. You know what I mean? Like, it was, that was, that was the starting point. But with some other stuff that's happened over the last, I suppose 12 months now since my ex had an accident, well, call it an accident or whatever. But there's been a build up of things, and then it sort of came back a little bit. Go a little bit off topic or sideways a little bit. My dad's battling cancer pretty hard. He's 2014. He got diagnosed initially. 2013. But he's been on and off, cracking, trying to kick it. Blood cancer. He's had, it's weird, he's had three different types of lymphoma, which they think is very, very rare. But the last one, it's come back pretty hardcore. So we're trying to process that, and there's lots of other stuff happening. There was a bit of a build up, about 6 months ago, and I hit the wall pretty fucking hard. And then I felt that a few mates needed to know, so like real close friends. So you know, we started chatting and stuff like that, and we a little bit like when I was talking to Fia, just come out, but they're like, fuck. And you know, and look, I said earlier, you didn't really say much about it. Or I never really said much about it in the past because you get a bit embarrassed, I guess. Because you don't know what people's reactions are going to be. So you just keep it to yourself, you know. But once it, like I said, talking to close friends about it, and once I got it out, they were really good. You know, which is, I was taken aback a little bit. It surprised me a little bit. I'm like, oh, fuck, that's good. And it's funny because you know who your fucking real mates are when something like that comes out, and they're like they're there for you, you know? So it's, yeah, I'm getting better. I still don't like talking about it, but I mean, I've come in here to talk to you about it because I'm probably pretty certain, I'm not alone, and there'd be plenty of other people that would listen to this that may have had similar experience. That's just basically just want to let people know that if you've got good friends to talk to about it, whether it's, you know, even sometimes it's a therapist or a doctor or your family or your just good mates just sitting there having a beer or whatever or however you do it, get it off your chest because it fucking helps. It's so much better.
It's funny. I was listening to a podcast not that long ago. It was a gentleman that had been abused as a teenager by a middle-aged man, I guess. And similarly to how you said at the time, you didn't really know better or that it was wrong. You know, it took to later on for that to click. He hadn't processed it like you since have, and he was still dealing with that memory as sort of a 14-year-old, and you know, saying I guess an extension of that, not saying that was your case whatsoever, but you can see the path I'm taking, that that he said that at the time he remembered it as having been close to consensual in nature, I guess, and the psychologist I was listening to said that he hadn't grown up in the memory, so to speak. So yeah, that when he had that awful memory, he was still interpreting it as a 14-year-old. He wasn't interpreting it as a, I think the bloke's in his 30s, but you know, it could be me at 38, you at 42, 43, did you say?
Yeah.
Realizing that, one, we find that fucking absolutely disgusting, and that, two, we would never be victims of it today or allow it to happen, and that's obviously something that you have processed, but for a lot of people, and particularly, you know, you're past it, so you can see it from both sides, but a lot of people, let's say, don't realize there was something wrong, or potentially even don't see themselves as victims at the time, but it's just a, you know, you need to separate yourself from the memory, I guess, and realize that you'd never let that happen to you or anyone else moving forward. So I found it interesting that you said that, man. And I probably don't have the experience to talk much more about that, but something that does interest me, and feel free to tell me to fuck off if it's a bit personal, although we've probably gone past a bit personal. How did your folks respond to hearing that, with you as an adult?
That's a completely different story. It wasn't that too long ago. At this point in time, I don't have a great relationship with my parents, which, you know, it makes me sad, but or my sister, so I'm sort of the black sheep at the minute, but that happens. Families, mate, you know, you've mentioned that you had a bit of a hit and miss in relationship with your dad before he passed away. So I'm a bit the same with mine. Look, I've worked with him, I've worked for him, worked with him. Hard, mate. He's first generation Dutch. So, you know, both his parents were Dutch and moved to Australia after the Second World War. So, look, he's Dutch without, but like, not with it, you know, not living there. So, look, and Dutch people, they're notoriously prickly. it's funny because I've said this too, and look, it might be harsh, but in many ways I'm like him, but in so many ways I'm not, and I'm happy about that.
I think that's every son, mate.
Yeah, could be. You know, look, it's like I said, so many ways I'm like him, but so many ways I'm not, and the ways that I'm not, mate, like, I'm proud of that. So anyway, getting off track a bit, but we were in the heat of an argument, actually, and I'm not, this might be going towards one of those other questions about,
we'll get there,
not being proud about it, but and my dad's, he's always been about hard ass or whatever, you know, tough bloke, in the heat of this argument, it came out, and explained. They still don't know who it was, or how it happened or anything like that. We haven't got into that part of it yet, or, you know, we haven't discussed it. My mum's talked to my partner Fiona about it a bit, and they've talked about me, which is fine. You know, I don't mind. That's good. And mum. So mum had a bit of a panic attack and dropped to her knees and curled up in a ball on the floor, and grabbed my dad by the neck and lifted him off the ground, and saw the whites of his eyes. This was when he was in remission from cancer. So and seeing the way that he is now, I wouldn't put a finger on him. But at the time, different circumstances, he was in remission, all that sort of stuff, and, you know, he was back to his old self, as he was. And I grabbed him by the neck and picked him up off the ground and looked him straight in the eye. I said, "You weren't there to look after me. Where the fuck were you?" And he shit himself. He thought I was going to fucking kill him. And I looked at him and I went, "Oh, shit." And I put him down and I just walked away. And, I'm not very proud of it. And he's sick and I want to fix it. Want to try and sort it out, but yeah.
Well, that's a record now, mate. So you're gonna have to.
Hopefully we can sort it out before things get any further along. That's all I'll say. So, but I'm still not sure. I'm still not sure if my mum's processed it completely. Well, we haven't discussed it or anything. I know. Like I said, your mum have. But yeah, that's their discussion, I guess, about me, you know, if they're talking about me and leaving someone else alone, so that's okay.
I'd also, but, you know, assume it's entirely out of caring about you rather than gossiping, mate.
Yeah, so. That's right.
Well, fucking, we'll try and dig ourselves out of this emotional hole. Yeah, we've just fucking,
let's do that.
Spent half an hour.
Sorry, man. I know, you're, you haven't had the greatest of fortnights, and I'll come in and fucking load all my shit on top of you.
No, I mean, I'm, you know,
so
I'm not super talented at lots of things, so I'm kind of excited.
But you're a fucking great listener.
Well, if that's what I got to offer, was saying to Mitch earlier that it's a bit fucking self-indulgent, but had a catch up for group of guys that were close to the friend we lost, and you know, if I'm emotionally durable, it's only fucking recently, I guarantee that. And I'd kind of become the leaning post, and it's probably as much because of this platform, and also we lost a beautiful young man at the footy club a couple of years ago, and fuck knows how, but I kept my shit together and tried to be there for most people, so maybe without meaning to put my hand up to be that strength. So if you know, I might be super good at sports and whatnot, but if I can carry a dark load for some brothers occasionally, I'm...
No, mate, you're doing a great job.
Excited by that.
Good for you.
All right, so happy day, sunshine, fucking rainbows here with Mitch. So, mate, what's the best moment of your life, Mitch?
Oh, like, I could turn around and say, oh, the birth of my children, all that sort of shit. Look, all three of them were gifts from, you know, from Mother Nature. Awesome time to be around them when they're born and all that sort of shit. And that's a good thing. But I think, going back to, you know, we're talking about sports and stuff like that. Like the last few years, 2017 was the first year that we went to Alice Springs to watch the Fink Desert Race. And that's a huge, massive event in Alice. This year was obviously, it was cancelled completely because of COVID. Had no choice, but yeah, it's massive. 650 motorbike riders, about 120 off-road trucks and buggies and cars and stuff. 240K race from Alice Springs down to Apatula, which is a community, like, well, the white fellas call it Fink, south of Alice. Overnight stop and then race back the next day. It goes along the old Gam railway line. So 2017, me and Fee went on a holiday. We went up to, you know, did Uluru and all that shit. Kings Canyon and all that, and we went and watched Fink. And I'd sort of had a bit of a thing in my brain about having a crack at it a few years ago, because when I took over the family business in 2000, my bike racing had sort of run its course by then. So when I say run its course, it got to the, I'm a small businessman now, so, I'm self-employed. If I get hurt, who's going to work for me and all this sort of shit. So it was like, nah, do the right thing, family man, sell the bikes, to get rid of everything. And I didn't touch a motorbike for years. And I must have been... Anyway, but I have problems now. Like, my body's fucked. It's flogged, mate. Like, I've got fucking two root... I've rooted knee, hips fucked, my back. When I was about 17 or 18, this is starting to give me grief now, I compressed T7 and 8 in my back. So I was in a brace for a while, you know, broken. So anyway, I came back, I got out of that, it healed and I got back into it. So that was fine. And then I raced a few more years and sort of stopped it and gave it up. And then obviously when I started working in the bike shop again after I got out of the family business, started doing a bit of motocross and all sort of stuff. And I'm like, I'm gonna have a crack at Fink one day. So anyway, 2017, we went and spectated, and one of my best mate, Brad Raffin, you'll listen to this. He lives in Sydney, and we met. It's this old saying. They said you meet the people you meet through sport, and you would know this too. And all this sort of stuff, it has no boundaries, it has no borders, it's unbelievable, and the wide reach that it has, like, you know, you lived in Western Australia, so you got friends over there still from sport and all that sort of shit.
Hugely,
you know,
mate, massive. Hugely.
That's right. So, you know, like, so Brad's raced it for, I think, since 2002 or something like that, like, and he's a bit older than me, but, yeah, they did an article on him, one of the magazines, because he was like, he's a big dude, like a big dude, like six or something, and he's huge. look, and he was bigger. Look, he's lost a lot of weight and he was bigger. And I think he was about 180 kilos at the time. And he's the biggest guy to ever finish the race. Like, finish it. Yeah. So anyway, he's got through it all and, you know, he's come out the other end. And, but, yeah, so we went, oh, no, I saw him. I'm like, oh, Bradley. I was like, oh, hey, man, what's going on? Anyway, so we started chatting. And I said to Fee, I said, I've got to fucking have a go at this. This looks crazy. And then, yeah, I saw some YouTube videos and all that sort of shit, and as you do. And, but, so 2018, I thought, right, I'm going to make the 2018, I'm going to have a go. So anyway, got through the divorce, got settlement. The kids were settled. Everything was sort of, we were back on track a little bit, you know, like everything was sort of smooth sailing type thing. Fee was pregnant with Harvey at that point, is our young fella. So she didn't come up. So we got a bit of a crew of blokes together, me brother-in-law, and a few of his mates helped out, and we went, bang, we're going to Fink, no worries. So my objective was to race the race on the smallest bike. So there's different classes, so there's different capacities of bike. Most of the real fast guys either ride a 500 or a 450 four-stroke, and I thought, nah, I'm going to do it on a 125 two-stroke. And everyone's like, oh, you're fucking mad. Like, why would you do that? I'm like, well...
Didn't care about your eardrums, mate, obviously.
Nah, no one does it on a 125. And I actually had a mate that did it back in the 90s, like, and he finished top 10. Like, he was fast rider. And he did really, really well. And this was before the race got mega... shit. The race got mega popular. And... no, I didn't spill it. Race got mega popular. And so, Reefy did it on a 125. I think it was 93, something like that. So, 28 years ago. 27 years ago. And... yeah, he got top 10. I'm like, oh, fuck, I'm going to do it on 125. So I did my research and I built a bike and off we went. And competing and finishing that race, I didn't have a great – I had a great race, but I didn't have a great race, if you know what I mean. Like, my result wasn't really where I wanted to be, but I finished. I completed it. I got down to Fink, I turned around and I raced back and I made it back. And then the minute I got back – I got over the finish line, was good, but I got back to the car, you know, and had a little bit of a minute just to sort of sit and go, fucking hell. Like, and I'm not a victim. Like, I don't want people to think I'm a victim or any of that sort of shit, or, you know, feel sorry for me or any of that sort of stuff. But just to think, like, after all the fucking shit, I did it. I made it to the end. I got there and I got back. And I will add too, 2000, is that, we're sort of doing a bit of circle and round about here. 2013, I was diagnosed with Crohn's disease, which is an irritable bowel disease. People, listeners don't know about it. It's a autoimmune problem. So your immune system goes into hyperdrive, so you need to medicate to try and slow your immune system down to stop it fighting your own body, fighting itself. So I'd had some stress leading up to that point before I got diagnosed. But for some reason, I don't know whether, I'm not sure. I've spoken to some specialists and some stuff about it, whether it's suppressed emotion or something, because they reckon stress can trigger it. But like I said, it's probably going back around a bit. But it was even before that period. So up 2014, I got diagnosed. So then they medicated me, but like, I was to the point, I dropped in, I was about 62 kilos. And there was touch and go whether they opened me up and take some of my small bowel out. And then stitch me butthole up and put a bag on me for 6 months and all this sort of shit. I'm like, fuck. Anyway, but touch wood, I've been in remission since, and the medication that the doctor, she was an awesome doctor, she's retired now, gastroenterologist, was amazing. She got me on the right medication with the right dosage, and mate, I'm pretty much symptom free. I'm functional and all that sort of stuff. So to have Crohn's, and a lot of people said, oh fuck, how are you going to race? How are you going to do that race with that? So I did the race, and then like I said, all the shit that happened in the lead up to it, with the divorce and all that sort of stuff with the kids and all that sort of stuff, and then my Crohn's and all that, on top of everything, I got to that one point and I just fucking went boof, and just basically laid down on the ground and went, fucking hell, I can't believe it. So, yeah, that was pretty crazy. And then it was my birthday the day after, so we got fucking destroyed at the pub there. So that was pretty fun. But then, yeah, there's a whole story to that, mate. It could be a whole other podcast just on that week or 2 weeks. It was nearly in the end because we had a breakdown of a car and then we had to get flights, and it was it was fucking insane. But and then I missed the next race that I was going to do, which is desert racing in Mildura, because none of our shit made it back in time, and because I had to get a truck from Allison. Oh, it's fucking nuts. But yeah, I've done it since. I did it in 2019. Now I went in a little bit better prepared with a better bike and better fitness, and which I find it hard to train because I'm not really a gym person. So I run a little bit, cycle a bit. I can't run anymore because my knee's fucked, but cycle a bit and row. I've got a rower, so I get on that and smash the fuck out of it. But, yeah, I probably should lay off the piece a bit too. That is one of my problems. I'm not saying my drink problem, but, yeah, it's hard not to because I like it. But yeah, doing it in 2019, I finished at a 650. I finished 280th on my little 125. There was another guy that rode a 125. He's a lot younger than me. He's only 820 or something. Oh, he's not. He's 18. And but his bike was overboard one, so it was 134. And he's a good kid too. I met the family, and then they it's like the motorbike community. Everyone knows everyone, and they were friends with other friends, and so I hang a bit of shit on him. But this year we were finished 280th out of 650. I got 12th in my class, which was pretty cool. And then yeah, the bike was set up awesome, did all that sort of stuff. And then this year with me and a few other friends, so Brad, my mate in Sydney, and another guy who I think you should probably get in here too, because he's, mate, the shit that he's had to go deal with and all that sort of stuff too. His name's Corey. Fucking good knacker. Great mate.
Hook us up.
I will. And so we'd plan to – we've got a little racing team. It's called $1.25, because my bike's a 125 two-stroke and we've been doing it on a tight budget. So $1.25 desert racing is our little thing. So we actually – started asking around, because Corey goes, well, I want to do it too. I'm like, oh yeah, cool. Right, let's get into this. So we started asking around, and we got some, you know, started talking to some local businesses, other businesses other than ours, because, you know, Corey's got his own business as well, and so have I. So we started talking to some other people. And it got to a point where it was like, fuck, you know, we're going all right here. And, you know, we started getting some sponsorship together, and, you know, we had a plan though. Like, it was we were doing this as awareness for mental health, because like dirt bike riding, like most sports, is a escape for people. And it, like, we know ourselves that we can turn off, like we can switch off and just go for a ride, you know, and it's awesome. And you just turn your brain off and go. And so we got this little team thing sort of happening, and we started getting some good sponsorship dollars after we explained to us what we're doing. You know, we're starting to raise awareness for mental health, and we're going to start making some, you know, Beyond Blue is pretty close to our heart. And it was like, fuck yeah, look, you know, this is going to – and then obviously, oh, shit got cancelled because of COVID-19, and they closed the borders to the Northern Territory, and it was all a fuck up. But anyway, that's – so all going to plan. Hopefully I see the chief health officer for the NT has closed the – border till for 18 months, but we'll see what happens. But yeah, hopefully it goes ahead next year, because all these people that have going to help us out this year have agreed to come on board for next year. So our little $1.25 desert racing setup will continue, and we're going to do it for the same reason, yeah, bring awareness for mental health, and hopefully, you know, get out there and raise a few dollars for Beyond Blue and get amongst it. So
bloody love it, mate. We'll have to have a debrief on the podcast afterwards, yeah, and let know how it goes. I was actually just sorry, didn't mean to be rude, jumping on my phone. I just want to make sure I got the name right. Have you seen the Australian documentary called Dream Racer?
Dream Racer, yeah, I think so.
Mm. I'll flick you the link. If not, so it's a guy that was always going to do Dakar Rally.
Oh yeah, yeah.
With one of his good mates, I think he's actually Dutch anyway.
Yeah, he could be. Yeah,
randomly, and for those listening, I'm not sure if I might have mentioned it before because I'm just a nuffy for the film, but it's basically a fella in probably late 40s who was always going to do Dakar Rally with one of his good mates. He was a former motocross champion, and his mate unfortunately passed away of lymphoma, I think, randomly. Yeah, tie in some more to the story.
Yeah, I think you're right.
And by fluke, he bumped into a young Aussie guy who was a documentary maker who got very accoladed with his first flurry into filmmaking, and then had a huge writer's block. And they met, and he started kind of recording the story of this guy going to do Dakar Rally. And the cinematography in it is incredible. Storytelling incredible. And, you know, this guy breaks bones and goes on this emotional journey and somehow finishes the race. And I think I watched it on a plane to England or something. Maybe it came up in the options, and
awesome.
The 2 hours evaporated. It was an amazing story.
Yeah, it can, mate, it can suck you in. There's another one that they've done on the Fink Desert Race. It's called There and Back. It's on iTunes or what, on Apple TV or whatever it is, and a lot of those platforms. Garage, I think, is another one. It was made by a guy from Alice and his mate, and it's a storyline of a few guys that are doing it. There was one guy that recovered from cancer and all that, and they follow just regular people for the race and that sort of stuff. All that There and Back. There and Back's more of a movie about the actual race itself. But there's another special from 2019, the race, the last race they ran. There's a special that Channel 10 had on, I think, and they talk to all these different people that had been through all this different shit that were racing. There was a guy that recovered from cancer and all that sort of stuff. But the There and Back, that's narrated by Eric Banner. And it's an awesome movie. It is so good. Yeah, and it explains, you know, how it all... And if you're not a motorcycle or motorsport or car racing fan, you can actually sit and watch it. It's really good. It's very, very well done.
He's a bloody good narrator as well.
He is, yeah. And he loves his racing.
Loves his motorsport.
Yeah, loves his bikes, loves his cars.
Flip the coin again, mate. So I've only got two more deep and dark questions we'll flick through the last couple. So what would you say is the most embarrassing moment for you, or where have you least met the Mitch standard, so to speak?
Oh, that's a tough one. Like I said a little while back, the discussion I had with my parents about the past didn't turn out as well as I would have hoped. That's pretty high on the radar. Another one would be some of the stuff that you've got to do when you're going through a messy divorce. Some of the stuff that they don't coach you into doing it, but stuff that just happens, you know. Some of the process made you feel really, really uncomfortable, and some of the stuff that had happened through that may even contribute to why my daughter doesn't contact me, which, you know, it's not much fun. But so some of that sort of stuff I'm not real proud of. But other than that, got a bit of a memory block, mate. But there's probably way more.
it's a good indication, though. It's always the ones you know the best that you know how to hurt, I guess, is the reality
of
it.
And actually, Fiona said that too. Yeah, it's the ones that you love are a bit of a punching bag, I guess. Come back to use an analogy that probably isn't the right thing to do, but yeah, it can come back to get you.
Emotional punching bag.
Yes, let's say that. Well done. We'll use that one.
All right, pretty much the worst of it, mate. So cool. It's kind of downhill and sunshine from here.
It's been pretty...
I think we've covered it.
Yeah, we've been pretty happy. Been pretty happy with some stuff there. So yeah, mate. But like I said, finishing Fink was pretty... That was the biggest, after all the crap, that hit me pretty hard. As in, emotionally.
Yeah.
But, it's good. Good problem.
Bloody oath. It's always nice to surprise ourselves with what we're capable of.
Yeah.
It might be the same answer, mate. So what's the bravest or most honourable thing that you think Mitch has been able to come up with?
Bravest thing. Yeah, I don't know about. There's plenty of guys that ride motorbikes and stuff like that. I wouldn't say that's a brave thing. Bravest thing, I think, like speaking out about things that have happened that you're uncomfortable with. I think that's probably the bravest thing that any of us can do, really. Not just me. But, you know, like I said, it's if you can get, if you've got the opportunity to get some shit off your chest and you're talking to the right people, fucking do it. Yeah. And like I say, therapy's not for everybody. It wasn't for me. Talking to doctors and shit, like, nah, it's not. Talking to a stranger, you know, and I've heard this plenty of times too, off, you know, like listening to other podcasts and yours and stuff like that. You can, and even Fiona, like she's had to talk to people and stuff like that about how, you know, how her state's been over the years. And, you know, you can talk to so many different therapists or specialists or whatever. And it's a bit like a mechanic, I guess. Like, it takes you, like, just because you've got a qualification doesn't mean you're fucking good at it. It's probably blunt, but, you know, just because a therapist has a certificate hanging on the wall and they've done a degree doesn't mean they're a great therapist. So, you know, look, I say, I don't think it was for me, but if you can talk to the right people and you know, and they can talk to you too. You know, look, I've become, you know, I've found myself a lot more now, which actually going back to stuff that I'm not proud of, like there's probably lots of stuff as in like, at least, you can judge people really easily. I used to find myself, maybe that's just a maturity thing, but I used to find myself doing that a bit, you know, like, you know, and, oh, perfect, actually, perfect example of that. Perfect example is, actually, we've just become friends on Facebook. It's Lockie Ford, right? I've played a lot of cricket around this district all my life, and I've played against Ray, and I've played against Lockie, and I've played against Jared, and I've played against Mitch, and I've played against all of them, and, you know, and it was like taking you, and you, when you played Longford back in the day and you played against the Floyd family, you'd go, oh, fuck the Floyds. Here we go. Right. And look, me and Locke could probably have a laugh about this now. But listening to the podcast that he did with you and not knowing what he was going through with his anxiety and things like that, even when he was umpiring and that stuff. Look, here you go. This is our fucking small community, our area is. My partner Fiona used to work for Jenny and Ray at the Servo, you know. So, and she's got nothing but praise for both of them. But, you know, like I said, and I wouldn't be alone in saying this, that there'd be plenty of other cricketers that have played at other clubs, not Longford, at the time when they were there. It was like, oh, fucking, I'll come up against the Floyds again this week. But, you know, but listening to what Lockie had to say, it's just like, well, that's probably contributed to some of the way some of his actions used to be. And I think you go, and so many people are fast to judge until you, you know, and I think that someone, I hear this a lot too, like, just be nice to people because you don't have a fucking clue what anyone else is going through in their head. So just be nice.
So just confirming he was pretty chirpy back in the day.
Oh, fuck. It was like,
love you, Lock.
Oh, mate, because Ray would go and then Rolly and Lockie would go. But it was funny because Jared wouldn't say a fucking word. He was the most placidest out of all of them. And he wouldn't say a thing. And then you'd hear Ray, and then you fuck. And then you hear Lockie, it was like a parrot. Both of them bounce off each other and you're like,
I guess Jared could play a bit, so he didn't need to do as much chirping as the other two.
Jared could bat, yeah. Oh, but hey, Lock was a good cricketer. He's a good cricketer. He's all right. Yeah. Ray was hard to get out. It was a pain in the ass. He always fucking hold up an end and all the shit out of you. But that's all right. It's all good. It's all good fun. It's all back in the day.
All right, mate. We're into the quicker stuff, so we'll try and
you're right, mate.
Give the merit, but knock him out. So
cool.
Who's your hero, Mitch, or someone that you admire?
Actually, I've been thinking about this a bit. You know, like a lot of people got sporting heroes and all that kind of crap. My hero is my son, Zane. He's 12. He's gone through so much more in his life than a 12-year-old boy has to fucking deal with. With all this shit that me and his mother fucking went through, you know, kid that rub does bounce off and rubs off on kids. But you know, he always had a level head. With his the birth of his little brother, you know, he welcomed it. Reckon it was the best thing in the world. You know, had such a good time with it, and he still does because he predominantly lives with us now. Because his mum struggles to care for him.
Yep.
In a capacity that she'd love to, and we'd like her to as well. But you know, I wouldn't say it's water off a duck's back to him because, look, I do think there will be a time and a place where he will fucking explode because he's so passive. And I hope that we can all deal with it together when he does go off. But, you know, and then after his mum's, you know, his mum's accident and all that sort of stuff and how he's dealt with it, like I said earlier, he found her and, you know, he's been by her side a lot, you know, and... Like, he handles it like a fucking trooper. And, yeah, he's my hero. Honestly, deep down, he's fucking... he loves his motorbikes and he loves his pushies and he goes motorbike riding all the time and with his mates and all that sort of shit. But, you know, seeing the man that he's going to grow into, even from now, fucking, he's my hero, mate. He's unreal.
That flows pretty well into the next one, I guess, and it's the first time I've had that answer, so I really love it. You know, kids are just... learning machines, you see them pick up how to deal with trauma, like their learning timetables or whatever else, and then I guess you see kids that have been a bit too sheltered when they hit shit later in life. It's a real struggle for them. So what's most admirable about you, would you say, mate? Well, I guess we kind of touched on it with your broader answer to what you're most proud of having put out there in terms of your honesty and openness to discuss things like we are today, but... What would you say is your best quality?
I think now is listening, which I never used to be very good at. And I think there'd be a few people around that would be in the same boat. It's taken me a long time to listen to other people, whether it's problems or whatever, or, you know, like I always was a little bit... and. Look, I'm not blaming anyone or whatever, but when I was in my marriage relationship, we'll say that, I think I was very self-centered to an extent. But now I think I've turned a corner and I'm a lot better at listening to other people. One issue that I do, I guess it's not an issue, but... I find it hard to say no to people, like, you know, look at, and, you know, when people ask for help and I do say no, I feel really, really bad about it, because I don't like saying no, I'm a helper, you know, I want to help out, so yeah, that's probably it, I reckon. Probably I've gotten better at over the years is listening and yeah, but.
It's funny, mate, I see I've grown to see a huge correlation between one's comfort in their own skin and the balance between listening and talking, so to speak. And I notice whenever I'm too opinionative, which is unfortunately plenty of the fucking time, it's usually when I'm not necessarily comfortable with something I'm up to, or, you know, I could probably step back and sit still for 15 minutes and work out there's something I need to stop doing that's making me need to over contribute to conversation. but you know, working that out on top of being quick to self correct, I think it's given me a lot of empathy. You know, when you're in that group situation and there'll be the person that needs to one up the story and be the one talking, where not to, this is probably sounds arrogant maybe, but where a lot of people might at face value say, oh, you know, what a, that person talking is arrogant or whatever it may be. For me, I just straight away think that's someone that needs validation and that isn't necessarily doing great in their own skin if they want to be talking more than they're happy.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. And that comes with maturity a bit. Like, and some people do it faster than others. But yeah, I think you're right there. Definitely. I'm a lot more comfortable with who I am now than I used to be. And I think that's got a lot to do with getting some of the past off my chest to the right people, I think. And, you know, going to bang a drum, bang an old drum, or, you know, go back over same old ground. But, you know, talking to the right people is the best thing you can do.
Very true, mate. Very true. Well, last couple of quick fire ones. How would you describe your current relationship with your mental health, mate? Good segue, actually, because we're kind of talking about it, really, aren't
we? Yeah,
we
are. It still ebbs and flows. I'm self-employed, and you know, sometimes that's hard work. You know, hard work, and it can beat you down a bit. But you just, I have more nowadays. I have more good days and bad ones. So it's good. You know, So having more good days and bad, I think if you're going to talk about it in percentages, I'd probably say 70-30. So if the percentage is in the positive, I think I'm going all right.
I think if you're not hoping to be comfortable with that as well, you're setting yourself up for failure. You know, you see a lot of, I feel like we're moving out of it, but that sort of overparented generation, maybe that have hit adulthood in the last, let's say, 15 years, that, you know, if it doesn't make you happy, throw it away. It's like, that's bullshit, because there's going to be some days where you have no fucking right to be happy, because life's just happened. You need to be trying to do shit that makes you feel fulfilled.
Yeah.
And hopefully then most days will be better than the bad ones.
Yeah. Well, I don't really listen to the radio at all, but I was talking to a customer today. He's an older, real old, like old guy, really nice fella, but he goes, I was listening to Neil Metro's one. I said, oh, yeah. He goes, yeah, there's old World War II vet on there, actually. And this will segue a little bit into some other stuff. Like, my nana passed away, when was that? End of last year. She's 105, right? I think she was the oldest lady in Victoria, I think, at the time. But yeah, this guy was on the radio, and he was 104. He was a Second World War vet. And he's like, mate, there's just so many people complaining about nothing now. If you've got to stay home and put a mask on, you know, how about going to war? How about leaving your family when you're seven? When you're 17, because a few of them did, and go to a country you've got nothing, you know, no interest in, or you don't have a clue what's going on, and fighting for something you have no idea what you're fighting for. Really, you're fighting for what you're told is a good thing, and what you're told, you know, you're a soldier and you're fighting for Australia's freedom, but that's what you're told. You don't know that. And, you know, a lot of them didn't come back. And some of the stuff, like, in, you know, PTSD and stuff like that nowadays, like talking about, you know, all that kind of stuff, like, it's so real. And a lot of people I'd probably say that some people struggle with resilience. That's the way I'd put it nowadays. And, you know, if some people can have a bit more resilience, I know not everyone's going to have great resilience, and some people will struggle with that. But if you can have better resilience, I think you'll go a lot further in being happy.
I think it's entirely true, mate. And I often think we're a bit spoilt growing up in the country, that usually as country kids you'll be exposed to life and death a lot more, be it through pets or you know, livestock, or just from being out and about closer to the bush and whatnot, on top of, you know, your family. So you get to see the cycle fairly early on and learn that life's not at all fair, and that it's not all about us, and learn how to grieve and deal with it and get on. And it's true resilience is a huge, huge aim to aspire to. It's a great book.
Yeah.
That I can see from here on my side table there.
I can see it there too.
Resilience Project.
And this comes back to, sorry to butt in or cut you off, but this comes back to what's been playing out in your life very recently too, with the footy club. You know, like you say, guys have been gravitating towards you because of your platform that you have here. And, you know, when there's tragedies that happen, they find someone that they will gravitate to. And, mate, you've got great resilience.
I'm getting there. I'm certainly getting there.
You are. You are getting there. You're going well.
Let's not talk about me, bitch. So something you're looking forward to or excited about, mate, I guess $1.25 racing.
Fucking COVID shit. This will be good. Going back to the pub and have a beer. I went out for dinner not too long ago for a friend's 50th birthday. So that wasn't too bad, but it was unusual, you know. Don't stand up. You've got to sit down. You can't sit, you know. You can't sit there. You can't sit here. But anyway, that is what it is, and that's the life we're living at the moment. Hopefully the Fink goes ahead next year so we can get up there and have a crack at that.
Yep.
And the other thing I'm looking forward to is two things. Hopefully, I can mend some relationships with my daughter and my parents and get some stuff, and my sister, and get some stuff sorted out there. And I think that's about it, I reckon. And just seeing how my boys are going to grow up. That's probably it, I reckon. Just helping them along.
Love it, man. It's all very aspirable there, so totally understand. Piece of advice you'd give 18-year-old Mitch if he was in the listening mood.
Oh, fuck. Don't.
Get a fucking haircut.
Get a haircut. Probably. When I was 18, I used to burn the candle at both ends all the time. And, I wasn't the greatest motorbike racer in the world or any of that kind of stuff, but if I had have applied myself a bit more instead of, I'll go to the pub and then I'll only be there till 10:30 and then I'll get up at 5 and I'll go to Leongatha. You know, instead of doing that and actually applied myself a bit more, it could have been different. But so if I had some advice for my 18-year-old self, it would be, well, there'd actually be two pieces, and they're sort of a little bit different. So one would be knuckle down, dickhead, train harder, get off the piss and stop being a dickhead, and you'll get places. So that was first. That's number one. Number two would be I must have been a bit younger, and I can understand this too. I was a bit younger than that, and I was playing with went to Melbourne to find fame and fortune, and I was still an apprentice, and they wanted me to go, and then and then mum and dad talked me out of it, you know. But I had so much going on too, like whether it was a good idea or a bad idea, but the other piece of advice I'd probably give myself too would maybe take that chance and fucking, you know, I know shouldn't not listen to your folks or whatever, but maybe go and have a go. You don't know until you have a crack at it, is what I'm trying to say, I guess. And I suppose that rings true with both of those statements, like, you know, musically and also sports orientated as well. Like, you know, if I had a knuckled down and done this, that could have been different. Or if I had gone to Melbourne and played music with this band, that could have been different, but I didn't. So, you know, I'm here still.
Understand,
but you know, I got married young, had kids young. I guess, well, 23 is pretty young. So, but, you know, that life could have been different, and it rings true for everyone. Well, everyone's life could be different, but it's not. So, piece of advice would be, so either, train harder, get off the piss and train harder, or, yeah, go and
rock and roll harder.
Go and rock and roll harder. But then that could, one that, or the could other. That could not end well too sometimes.
I can imagine.
Mm.
Well, we're pretty much done, mate, but you know, you're a huge supporter of the platform, and
yes,
and always
sure.
given feedback and whatnot, which I hugely appreciate. So
no worries,
as you know, I throw the mic to my guest, so to speak, which is always fucking interesting to end these episodes. So something you'd like us to discuss, or something you'd like to ask me, even, mate?
I don't know. Look, I suppose a couple of things. What are you looking forward to?
It's a good question. Was kind of discussing this with Jeremy on the last podcast,
yeah.
but kind of not as well. I think I'm for the first time, maybe just for the first time, I probably don't need to say in a long time, because it might just be the first time. I'm really enjoying day-to-day at the moment. There's a time a couple of years ago when I was in a job that wasn't doing a lot for me, where I really wasn't sure what I was excited to next, but at the moment, you know, I'm excited about this, I'm excited about next time I get to train some people in the gym, I'm excited about doing some gardening on the weekend. COVID hasn't been bad for me. I think I'd let the noise in my head get a bit busy maybe.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a tattoo on my shoulder that I got, trying to think, probably over 10 years ago. A fella called Laith Kingsbury that was working at Five Star Tattoos in Fremantle, shout out. and I've got a tattoo of roses on my shoulder that's supposedly there to remind me to take time to smell the roses, because I was for most of my life until probably the last period I had this cycle where I'd spend 7 years making things not too bad for myself and then set fire to them. So that was
self destruction.
Oh, for sure. So I was in that was the. That was the motive behind that tattoo, and it's probably taken me 12 years to take note. But at the moment, I'm definitely I'm excited. Wake up every morning and
good,
and I'm things like this make me feel like I'm doing what I should be. I guess so that lets me not stress too much about looking forward. With that said, I also love a road trip. So find an excuse to drive up the South Coast somewhere when this is done. Will certainly happen, but I'm also not panicked by being robbed of the opportunity at the moment.
Oh, that's good, mate. Yeah, that's one thing I've really missed too. Is job. My partner Fiona loves traveling. She's done a few overseas trips and stuff like that too. And yeah, she's really missing not being able to. She gets a bit of cabin fever because we live in a modest house, so it's not like there's heaps to do. And we've got a little fella that wants to go all the time because he's so fucking flat out. But yeah. Hopefully we can get out and about soon. But that's good, mate.
Love it, man.
I'm glad that you're in a pretty good place, I think, yourself.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah, and the benefit of that I guess is that, it leaves me durable to take on more responsibility and I think that's where fulfillment is found, so to speak. There's always opportunity and responsibility, I think they say. So hopefully being able to be a good mate for a couple of fellas yesterday and in general with this platform and whatnot, it helps my relationship with the bloke in the mirror, I said to someone today. So who actually listens to a lot of these? So Sean Mooney, if you have a listen to this one, mate, thank you for your text today and much love. I'm a better man for having you in my life, mate. Thank you. So
well said.
Reckon we'll wind that up, mate, and you can see your lovely lady and your little man and get on with it.
That's it. Roll on. Tomorrow's another day.
Thank you so much, man. I really enjoyed that.
Good one.
Blokes, thanks again for tuning in. Really hope you got something out of that. Start having those conversations with your mates, with your family, with a mental health professional if you need to. There's absolutely no shame in it. If you want to reach out to us or follow along, we're on Facebook or Instagram under Blokes Don't Talk. And to listen, we're available on all your good podcast platforms. Share it with a mate. Even if you're not quite sure, worst he can do is tell you he's not that interested. Might come back to you in a month or two and have really got something out of it. Thanks again. Talk next week.